Welcome to Local Exposure, a podcast about music and the greater Cincinnati scene. I'm Jim Nolan. Wonderlust is the third album by local band New Sincerity Works. And though it feels like it might be the conclusion of a trilogy, lead singer Mike Tittle tells me how that's not quite the case. We'll talk about the new album, the all-star band that created it, the beautiful cover art, and the album release party that's coming up. And we'll also discuss the super cool El Camino that appears in the band's new video. Mike Tittle, thanks for being on Local Exposure.
It's great to be here. Really appreciate it.
It's kind of funny because you and I have a lot of friends in common. We run in a lot of the same circles, but yet very rarely have you and I been in the same room at the same time, unless I've probably been out to see your band. It's one of the few occasions.
It's probably the last time I saw you. Yeah, thank you for coming.
So this is the third album by New Sincerity Works. When you put this together, did you intend this to feel like a trilogy? Because it does to me.
Interesting question. Originally, yes, I wanted this to be the third of a kind of like a complete statement of sorts. But I actually think I kind of abandoned that idea early on.
Why?
Originally, I wrote these songs to accompany a photo book. Yeah, I was going to have a book of fine art photographs published by a publisher. So this is personal work that I'd done. Very kind of organic visual diary kind of things. And she suggested in order to market the photo book, I should create songs to go with the photos. That way, she would actually have a chance of making some money on the book because I guess photo books make no money for anybody. So that is actually how I started the project. She curated the photographs, and I found myself one Thanksgiving, I think it was 2016, pretty much alone with a week's vacation, spread the photos out, and I wrote probably 16 songs to go with the photographs. that's how I got the record.
Okay.
Yeah, so this was all post the first two records. I was kind of going into the idea of, wow, I need a third record, and man, I sure hope it's like way happier than the previous two. And I just couldn't really write like that. I just couldn't get in the headspace. So having the photographs and the challenge of like making songs to go with them, I think just pushed me in maybe a new direction. That's how I got Wonderlust, and I didn't ever publish the photos. I actually decided that the photographs were like too much about me and too much like past history. So I just abandoned that portion of the project. But the songs felt like they were a bit more universal, and you could kind of read into them a little more open.
I really do feel that Wonderlust is more upbeat by comparison, maybe less lyrically, but more musically. You have a lot more synth. There's a lot of almost like Rick Ocasek kind of channeling going on through that. It is a very different musical departure from, say, 44 nowadays.
It definitely is. There's a lot more thought that went into this record just as far as constructing it and orchestrating it and even producing it. In fact, I would say this is the first record that is like theoretically produced, where the other two were more like moments in time and capture it and be urgent and quick. This was more thoughtful. But the other thing was also that I knew I had access to these musicians this time. Like I knew it was a bit more of a band than the first record was. I knew what the band was capable of. So when I constructed the material and kind of like got everything ready to be recorded, I knew where to leave space. And I knew what kind of like little touches would contribute to it. And then, I mean, you mentioned the Cars. I remember when I told Roger, the guitar player, Roger Klug, I said, well, there's going to be a lot of synthesizer on this record. And he kind of looked at me like, oh, is that a good thing? and I actually said, well, we all grew up with the Cars. I think it's probably a good thing. Yeah, definitely more colorful, more layered. Bob, the bass player, when he heard everything, said it was pensive and lush, and I've kind of taken that and stolen that because I think it does describe it pretty well, the music.
Let's talk about this all-star lineup that you have in your band. You mentioned Roger Klug, who's
essentially one of the local guitar gods.
Yeah.
He's just phenomenal. I mean, yeah. To watch him play is kind of disheartening for other guitar players, honestly.
He's incredible. He's just flat out like a brilliant, brilliant musician. I mean, I don't know if you've seen any of the chamber orchestra stuff that he's put together recently with the Beatles and the Summer Love. And he's so much about music. And on top of the fact he's just the guitarist. He's like, when you try to describe what he sounds like, you basically have to describe the 10 best guitarists in the world, because he's kind of a combination of all that. And it comes through in his playing. And I grew up listening and watching him, actually, from afar, because he was a bit ahead of me in school, but we grew up in the same side of town. So, you know, I used to go peer through my neighbor's basement windows and things like that, where he would be playing in bands. So I knew of him forever. And at one point, did some artwork for him and then started playing drums for him when he started his solo career.
Well, and then you have Bob Nieswanger, who, again, is one of those most recognizable names in town, at least among bass players, for sure.
He is, again, a brilliant, brilliant musician. He plays with so many people, and, you know, he touches people the same way. He just brings his personality and his unique perspective to every project. And I actually think this record is prototypical Bob Nieswanger bass playing. I mean, it might be some of the best bass playing I think he's ever done. And the fact that I was so insistent on the mixing, I don't know how many times I said, more Bob, more Bob, more Bob. And there's like a little mid-range EQ you got to ratchet up, you know, to make sure you're hearing his notes. But when you can hear what he's playing, it's like a counter melody. And some of the songs on the record wouldn't have existed on the record if he wouldn't have come in and kind of put this kind of low-end energy to it. And it just transformed the song. And I was like, wow, it's a keeper now.
Yeah. And then you have, let's see, Mike Landis playing guitar.
Yeah, Mike, who is just a great all-around musician. He contributes mostly on the mixing. He's mixed every album. But he's also playing live with us. Tom's not playing with us any longer. So I needed a reliable person that could play the parts that I recorded, but I'm not good enough on guitar to play live and sing. So Mike kind of does a lot of that and does a lot of the keyboards parts.
And then Greg Tudor is, how do I describe Greg Tudor? He's a very stable, present drummer without being overbearing, maybe?
Yeah. So I've known Greg since high school, when he was a drummer. Then I went to college, and I was in a band where we basically recruited Greg to learn how to play bass. We basically told him, you're not playing drums anymore, you're going to be a bass player, learn how to play bass. And of course, he not only learns how to play bass, but becomes like an amazing bassist. He plays in Roger Klug's Power Trio. Greg and I are the rhythm section. I play drums in that band. And then for New Sincerity Works, I was kind of like, well, I needed a drummer. And so Greg is really rock solid and really diligent in learning the parts. And he's just great.
And then one of the newest additions, I guess, would be Lauren Bray. Tell me about her.
Lauren, so Lauren I met about 2 years ago, and we actually started dating. So
you had to put her on the album.
Yeah, well, you know, it's always a debate, like, should I do this or not? And I would say that, like, towards the end of making this record, she was around so much, and she heard me working on the songs and heard me playing them, and I just noticed she started contributing melodies and singing, like, when I would be playing, and they sounded really good, and I was kind of blown away by how I couldn't remember my own lyrics, and she'd be in the like next room and she'd yell out like, oh, it's this line or whatever, and I'd be like, oh wow, she really knows the songs. So I added her to a couple songs late in the process. Like, I didn't write any of the songs for a female vocalist, but I knew that she was a great singer, and so I just put her on the record here and there. And actually, since the record, I've been writing a whole bunch of new tunes, and she's on almost all of them. And we're almost like doing a, not quite a duet thing, but she's awesome. So I've been doing acoustic shows around town, just the two of us, because it, you know, transforms me, the miserable middle-aged guy doing sad songs. You put her voice on it, and all of a sudden it's the same song, but everyone's like, oh man, I love your music. It sounds so good. It's so fun. And I'm like, but that's the same thing I've been singing about all this, you know. But it's like a whole thing now, and it's really fun, and she's great. So she's kind of debuting in this band. She's never really played. She's never played in a loud rock situation where, you know, you scream through the microphone and you can't hear your voice. And it's been a lot of fun. It's an awesome collection of like really unique personalities and demographics and ages.
Another part of the album that I really think needs to be addressed and mentioned and talked about is the artwork.
Mm.
It's beautiful. Who did the cover art?
It is awesome. And probably because I didn't do it for once. Again, I relegated it. This is another reason why it's not quite a trilogy, right? Because I didn't put a photograph on the cover. So the cover of this album was done by an artist named Aaron Morse. He's a Los Angeles-based painter and artist. I've known him for a long time, and I was actually out in Los Angeles on business maybe a year and a half ago and had dinner with them, Rebecca and Aaron, and they took me back to the studio where he paints and kind of just showed me what he's been doing for the 15 years I hadn't seen him. I mean, I knew he was good, but it was like, you know, seeing his work, I was just like, wow, this is amazing stuff. And I kind of went back home, and months later, I'm beating my head to come up with like a suitable cover for Wunderlust. And all of a sudden, I was like, I can't believe I never thought of it, but I was like, you know what? I'm going to send Aaron songs, the song list, and have him check out and see if he wants to do a cover. And I mean, within a week, he sent me 3 sketches. His process is fascinating. He starts with Photoshop and digitizes collage type things, and he mashes everything up, puts it all together, and then he projects it and he paints. He sent me 3 that were, I think, he had worked on, but that he would be willing to contribute to the record. And this one, they were all 3 very wunderlusty. I mean, they all 3 would have worked. But this one just looked really great, and I loved, you know, the mild symbolism in it and things like that. I had QCA do all the printing and packaging, and auto printing did the gold foil on the cover and back, which was kind of somewhat antiquated thing to think about in music these days, to go over and beyond on the printing. But
it does take it to that next level.
I think though. It does, yeah. And I appreciate that. But yeah, it's just an amazing cover, and I want it in my house big. I'm going to blow the photo up and put it on the wall, I think, yeah.
I want to play a clip from the album. I want to play a song that you actually have a video for. It's called Just Like Vapor. I can't explain why you chose me. There's not much value I can bring. I'm just an instigator, and we are just like vapor. Found. He'll be the sweetest sound. So, Mike, when you made the album 44, you said that the music is a reflection of the realization that life is an uncontrollable ride. Mm. Is it still an uncontrollable ride mm-hmm. for you?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah?
It is, right?
For all of us. And, yeah. You know, I don't want to get too political or, you know, sociological here, but I feel like some days it's more uncontrollable than others.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, especially now. I have a new profound affinity for creative types and people that are trying to do something outside of the norm that makes the world a little better. Because right now, I think it's like we need that stuff. I think it's really important. And that's probably why, you know, I think I got about 10% more energy for what I'm doing now, just for that fact. I feel like I'm not pushing things on people. I'm offering up a different place to go for a little bit of time. You know, artists are conflicted, I think, with commercializing what you do and, you know, self-promotion. I mean, it's just crazy what you have to do to get anyone's attention. I think in a humble way, we kind of maybe sometimes feel a little guilt about that. But in a time like this, I actually think it's a bit of a duty.
I do have to ask, though, about the video, Just Like Vapor.
Yeah.
Where'd you get the El Camino?
Yeah. So that was I know.
That's such an awesome car.
It's so good. And it's so weird because, like, that's not the El Camino I imagined I was going to find. Like, I was thinking I was going to get one of these, like, pristine show cars. It would be, like, red, white, and blue and have the chrome, like, handrails along the back. And, like, it would be kind of small and a little goofy. And the only one I could find was this guy, Dave Miller, a local guy. He had one and he was like, well, come down and check it out. And I came down and it was like a serious El Camino. Like it was like the V8, the massive, like super fast, big version of one, complete with like a door panel that was from another car. So it was like had a black, you know, one of the doors was black and the whole thing was matte. It was like a bronzy gold, you know, a color that nobody would ever put on a car anymore. And it was like powder coated. And so, yeah, it was crazy. I chalked it up to I've got this cast of characters, which is this band. And I will say it's a cast of characters.
Absolutely.
I mean, great faces, great features, all the stuff you need to make a compelling video. And I just chalked the, you know, this bizarre, strange car up to like an equal in the cast, you know. And it was funny because I worked with Dave Morrison on that video, who does a lot of great videos. He's a great drummer. Our original concept for that was like it was going to be like a Twilight Zone episode. So I actually thought like we would be able to like do some acting and kind of pull off like an old kind of vibe. Now, I didn't want it to be black and white, but I wanted it to be kind of this mysterious thing, and got into it. And it was like I was quick to realize, well, this isn't going to be anything like I thought it would be. Let's just let it be kind of fun and goofy. Of course, we picked like the coldest day of the year to shoot. It rained, snowed. There were 40-mile-an-hour winds. The winds were so bad that we couldn't actually get the drone up without like wrecking it. You know, there's some drone shots in it. But it was a lot of fun, and we celebrated like the most miserable spot in Cincinnati, which is down there off Pete Rose Way, you know, in that wasteland between Union Terminal and the river. You know, it's just like wasteland of industry, and it was a good time. And any piece of film that has the collection of the six of us in it, I'm grateful for.
I guess the last thing we really need to touch on is the fact that you have this album and it's coming out and people need to buy it and they need to come see you play it. So you're having an album release party on October 14th at Motor Pub with Wake the Bear.
I love Motor Pub and I love the Woodward. And for me, doing a show in either venue once a year, once every year and a half, where I can make a big deal out of it, get enough people in there to make it fun for everyone and make it profitable for the club, you know, I'm in. So the October 14th date was kind of thrown at us. We hadn't actually gotten together and played in like a year and a half. You know, we've been scrambling, like, get our act together and whatnot, but it's going to be a fun night. It's free. It'll be pleasantly loud. It'll pretty much rock out. There's not a lot of slow material, not a lot of like acoustic sensitive kind of stuff going on Saturday night. Wake the Bear is fantastic. That's Scott Cunningham from Promenade, and he hasn't played in a long time, and he's a good pal And it was great to have him be able to open because, you know, we don't have to deal with another band's gear. Us being a six-piece at Motor, which I don't actually know how we're going to get six people on the stage at that place. And I'm hoping with the all the activities down there, like the Blink, the lighting stuff and the arts going on, I'm hoping the 9:30 is a good slot for people to come in. And we'll do about an hour and a half, so it'll be well worth stopping by. I think it's going to be an awesome night.
The album is Wonderlust by New Sincerity Works. And for those of you listening, I highly recommend that you listen to it several different times in several different places, because I listened to it in my car and then I listened to it with headphones and got a completely and totally different experience. So the album release party is Saturday, October 14th at Motor Pub with Wake the Bear. Mike, thanks for coming in.
Thanks so much, Jim. Thanks for everything.
My guest has been Mike Tittle, lead singer, guitarist, and songwriter for New Sincerity Works. The music you're listening to right now is the song Midwest Reverie from their new album, Wonderlust. Wonderlust is available now wherever you buy music, but if you'd like some help, you can find links at wvxu.org/lx. And while you're there, check out Ron Esposito's recent interview with jazz great Fred Hirsch, who's just released a new album and a new book. Local Exposure is a production of Cincinnati Public Radio. The interview was recorded and engineered by Dave Shermer, thanks Dave, and produced by me, Jim Nolan. Until next time.